All right, hello and welcome to episode number 20 of the At U2 podcast, talking all things U2, new album news, tour dates, community discussions from the staff of At U2. For this episode, we have some folks who are a little jet lagged, a little bit giddy, might fall asleep, but we'll go in order of...
And sound like we have nasty colds.
Sound like Dublin.
Dublin voice, yes.
We have Dublin voice.
So you're hearing the lovely voices of Mr. Matt McGee. Hello, Matt.
Chris, how are you?
I'm well rested. I mean, I have kids, so I'm not super well rested, but I don't have Dublin voice. Sherry.
What time is it in the world?
What do you want? And Jill.
Hi.
Jill's fading.
I'm not fading. I'm just wrapped in my blanket on my couch doing a podcast on a Wednesday night.
There we go. Which brings me, not that you have to necessarily selfie that, but a few episodes ago, I sent out the request for folks who are listening to the YouTube podcast and post a picture somewhere on Instagram or Twitter. I forgot to check Instagram actually, but with the hashtag at YouTube podcast. I got another one. I don't think I mentioned this last episode. It was a bit of a weird episode last one too. But Allegra in Texas, maybe I did mention that. Anyways, thanks for sending in your picture of listening to the podcast somewhere in Texas. And so if you are listening and somehow can take a picture of yourself with the artwork in the background or something like that, we'd love to see it just for fun. And because stats and stuff are fun, but it's actually cool to see the podcast in the world. And also thanks to Fabiano, I think it was. Who tried to request Sleep Like a Baby for Matt on
That was awesome.
Seriously, one of the highlights of the whole
that
trip.
That was amazing.
It really
I've
was.
Got a great story about that. So when it appeared on the screen, my darling husband, we were back by the concession stands. And so he decided to try to get a few pictures and he noticed it. And he came rushing back to me. He goes, I don't believe it. I don't believe it. Sleep Like a Baby tonight for Matt's up on the screen. So I bolted into GA just to try to catch it. I'm going, oh, my goodness. And it must have repeated about 7 times.
It was on there a lot.
At least 7. That's a conservative estimate.
We have actually some listener sent in some audio. Where is it here? I just got to find this. Mr. Listener Tim Neufeld sent this in. So just at the end there, you can hear it faintly. I'll try and boost it in the audio recording later if it wasn't that loud, but just hear a faint. Go ahead, Sherry.
He didn't send you... the audio from Steve's Periscope from Dublin 2 right at the start of Streets, did he?
No, I didn't get that one.
Oh, okay. Because I heard from quite a few people that they recognized me screaming out, bring it, bring it, bring it!
Like they heard you, they recognized your voice from the podcast probably. That'll be another audio clip we'll save for the archives. Yes, if you were lucky enough to catch any of the At U2 Periscope streams during the show, you might have heard some extra commentary, some extra singing from folks. I think there is a little bit of picking up because I'm sure we all know it's unavoidable to sing along, regardless of how many people might be listening on Periscope. So, yeah,
Matt, I feel like you're going to bring out that hell yeah when you go to the Adele concert.
Yeah, I will totally do that.
Absolutely, right?
Yeah, same. That's a fantastic idea.
Me
she
too.
Had, but I keep waiting. What, Jill? When is she going to announce?
I'm going to find out. I will let you know. Like, I'm on it.
You get on top of that.
Are we dipping into an Adele podcast as well?
We're gonna. Would you host it? Jill and I are gonna do an Adele podcast, and you be the host.
Okay.
You could title it. Set fire or set unforgettable fire to the ring.
Yes. Yeah.
There we go.
You could merge the two.
You know what else I don't like?
All right, moving on. We're going to quickly go into the inbox. We've got a few questions and commentaries from folks. First up, we got a tweet from Sherry, who happens to be on this podcast. So this is a a good timing, I guess, how that worked out. We have it on good authority that rock stars actually smell good. So, Sherry, do you care to elaborate a little bit on?
Well, yes. We were having a fine conversation with many local Dubliners who happened to have had very close proximity to certain rock stars.
Wait, Sherry.
Yeah, how do rock stars smell like?
Okay, go ahead.
And the universal answer was good.
Okay.
So I said, you know, we think it's sandalwood. It could be cedar wood. Could be musk. What is it? And the individual said, just good. They smell good. And that was it. So I will take that as an official answer to what do rock stars smell like.
All right. Well, I guess we're good then.
What I tend to favor is sandalwood.
Yes, yes, we know, Adam. There's got to be some way to
He's
stop that guy.
He's always interrupting. Come
I know.
On, Adam. Jeez. It's the At YouTube podcast, not the YouTube podcast. Zip it, bub.
Steve Doza, Steve underscore Doza. No, sorry, not Steve. Steza underscore Doza. Will the experience tour have the same staging, they ask? I'm guessing, assuming there's an experience tour at some point, what do we think that they'll carry over the same staging?
Very little.
Yeah.
I think it's going to be totally different.
Do you think it would be an uppercase E as the main stage?
Oh.
Yeah. There's only three. Yeah, each person gets a what would that be, like a little leg out into the audience, whatever it's called. I'm sure there's some font nerd who's listening, and whatever those are called, the ligatures or something when the E goes out.
And would it be what a serif or a sans serif?
Exactly.
What are we talking about?
We'll just keep digging. We'll find our way back. Yeah, I think they'll do something different for sure. I think. As great as this has been, they definitely don't like to sort of rest on the laurels and keep doing what's been done. So, yeah.
Yeah, I think Paris is kind of like a hard stop for the INE tour. And I think that they know that when they tour next time that it's going to need to be something that works outdoors and probably indoors. So I just think that – I think what we watch on HBO – this weekend or whenever we get to see it.
Monday.
I think that, well, some people get to see it, you know, later this month, like it's on RTE2 on Christmas Day, et cetera, et cetera. So anyway, I just think we have to look at this as like this is the end of something for you too. So, it's just a gut feeling I have. I think that next year's tour, whenever it is, you know, with a new album, I think it's going to be quite different.
Yeah, as long as they don't go away for 5 years to dream it all up again.
Let's hope not, right?
And U2GW in the chat room mentions, not sure, because when the 360 went on for as long with so many different legs, the setup stayed the same, which is a good point. But I think what Matt said, like a new album sort of, I think, is maybe an indication. Like even with Zoo TV and Zooropa and stuff, it changed a bit, right, from each leg. It still was, I guess, fairly similar structure, so... Who knows? Both.
Yeah, I don't know. I just think that what's happening in Paris and the redoing of the show, the rescheduling, I just think it makes sense to close the book on what they've done with this year. So that's like I said, it's just my feeling.
Yeah. And, you know, they always want to like top themselves anyway. So they're going to be like, let's do a big E, like a big E stage or something, you know, like just changing it up a little. So
hold down,
yeah,
the shift,
I think it'll definitely be a little... different, especially with like a new album coming out. I mean, like exactly like we said, like as long as they come back, you know, as they come back, because, you know, I gotta have my iris, you know what I mean? I gotta have my ugly cry moment.
But that's gonna
you and me both, sister.
Yeah.
But that's gonna pose a very interesting dilemma for them, because this section of the tour has been so narrative based, it's been so story based, and the way that the critics have embraced it and the fans have embraced it. Once you get into experience, and these are going to be different songs from what we've gathered, you know, it's going to be a more rocking album. Might be more celebratory, might not be, but it's going to have a completely different feel than Songs of Innocence. So are they going to continue with a narrative design of the experience leg, or is it going to turn into what, you know, Edge had said many, many moons ago, that the experience leg would be a celebratory, although it might have been Adam who had said that, that it would be more of a celebratory thing. So I think that we're going to see a very different design to experience outside of just what the staging is going to be. I think it's going to be a completely different feel.
There you go. We'll see what happens, right? And that's actually a late-breaking question in from at Mysterious Days. Similar question of, do you think stage David. Design will stay the same for the next leg? And we'll just, on the fly here, throw in her another question. I prefer shows without special guests, better spirit and flow. Your thoughts, which is always a sort of a back and forth. I know I've heard, we talked a bit about this with Mark on episode 18 of the show about, you know, fans getting pulled up and some people getting mad that there's like, I didn't pay money to hear some cover band or someone else play Desire. I wanted to hear the Edge play Desire, so I should get $10 back off my ticket or whatever. What do you guys think? Especially at a live show, when you're there, it's one thing to be listening or reading a report about it afterwards and hearing about Noel Gallagher getting on stage with them or something. But when you're there, does it take away from the concert, or is it just kind of add in its an extra, whoops, sorry, extra little thing.
Cheers.
A little extra ding. That's UTG. I apparently have to turn off notifications in the chat room. Anyways, I'll go do that. Somebody else talk about whether.
I think it depends on the guest. I mean, because I did all the New York ones in the summer, and it wasn't until New York, the third New York one, where they brought a guest on stage, and I was Jimmy Fallon in the Roots, and I was like, oh, that's like awesome, because, you know, Jimmy Fallon's like a huge U2 fan, so it was good to kind of see him like indulge in his like fanboy moment. And then, you know, and then they brought a few nights later, like, Lady Gaga got to come on stage, and like, I love Lady Gaga, so getting to see her was awesome. And then Bruce Springsteen at, you know, the final New York show. So I think it really depends on the guest. I think it depends on the song they're going to perform, but I personally, like, I pay to see U2, so I would really like to see them play their songs. But again, like, I'm not going to shut down like a special guest, but I think for me personally, I think it really sort of like depends on who that guest is. Like, I don't, like, I know who Noel Gallagher is, but like, if I was there at that show he was at, I would have been like, well, I was like, cool, like, Noel Gallagher. But like, if you guys had seen me when Lady Gaga was there, you would have been like, this girl's out of her damn mind, because I was going completely nuts when I saw her come up on stage. So for me personally, like, I pay to see U2 and only U2. But if there's a special guest, I think for me it depends on who it is and what song it's going to be.
Yeah, which is fair, I think, too. And even if it's like Lady Gaga was kind of, maybe in the Lady Gaga podcast fan world, it was known that she was going to be coming on or something like that. But maybe it was more like a surprise too, which is kind of neat. And that, those kind of moments are kind of fun to have. So,
especially when it starts as like a rumor, and it's like they had predicted Bruce Springsteen like the entire time. And it wasn't until the final show when he like actually showed up. So it was like almost waiting 8 shows when he finally like came on stage, but the rumor like proved to be true. So I'm sure there have been rumors where like, oh, so-and-so is going to join with them, and it never sort of like materialized.
Yeah, exactly.
See, whereas I don't mind, because even though I'm going to a U2 show, I'm going to see what the band wants to provide to its audience. So, you know, I think back to a 360 show that I was able to listen online to, where they were in Africa, and they brought up on stage Hugh, Masekela to provide additional backing for, I think it was, I Still Haven't Found What I'm Looking For. So, you know, when they're traveling from country to country or city to city, I think that it's great that they're tapping into some of the local talent that happens to be in the area, who may be very important to that particular region or that city where they're at. You know, take Dublin Four, when they brought up
Panty Bliss.
Yeah, I thought that that was brilliant, and that was
a great
way.
That was great.
Yeah, and that was a great way to celebrate what Dublin and what the whole of Ireland had embraced a few months earlier. You know, so I think that whenever they want to bring somebody up there, you know, in the same way, who are we to tell them what songs to play? Mm-hmm. Who are we to tell them, no, I don't want to see Paul Simon up on stage with you. It's going to be a really bad moment. You know, mm-hmm.
It's also good with like YouTube because it's like, I feel like they do think about it. You know, they think like, all right, well, we're going to get Patti Smith and she's going to say People Have the Power. It's like really great how YouTube does it. It's not like, like when we've seen with Taylor Swift and she's just bringing her friends on stage or bringing somebody up on stage to sing a song with her because it's the most popular song on radio at the moment, where it was sort of just for the press, where you too, I think it's about the moment and like showing this to their fans and having them sort of like embrace and like appreciate that.
Yeah, I agree, Joe. That's a good point too, because it does feel like it's a little, like many things, you too, a lot more thought is put into it than just a random person to pull up on stage because it'd be like a fun Instagram moment or something to get.
I'm so happy she like never got Bono, Taylor Swift. Like I'm thrilled that it never happened.
But Bono had Miley last night. That's
yeah. And was she wearing some kind of like, I couldn't tell. Was it like a glitter pantsuit? Like I couldn't.
She was that out. From
Let's just be glad she was wearing clothes.
Yes. Yes. That was what I was about to say. She was fully clothed.
The only thing I was going to add to the discussion about guests on stage is that the thing that I like about it is that Bono seems to give him a lot more energy. I mean, he seems to really get into it when there's somebody else on the stage, whether it be to sing or play guitar or play piano or whatever it is. And that's the thing that I kind of like, is that it always seems to just amp him up a little more and just create a little sense of something new and different. And so I guess, you know, like if you have to play, you know, if you're playing, you know, I Still Haven't Found What I'm Looking For 60 times over the course of 2 or 3 months, and, you know, one time you get to have Bruce Springsteen or Noel Gallagher sing it, you know, and that makes it, you know, more interesting for him, then that's cool. I like that. So,
yeah.
And I was also thinking about Dublin 4 when Imelda May sang Desire, that was giving Bono a little bit of a break with his voice because he was, you know, suffering from a slight cold. So sometimes the placement of the additional singer is also useful to help him out too.
Yes. And okay, so let's move it on before we'll get into some of the Dublin stuff yet, before everybody falls asleep. Not the listeners, I hope, but...
Do we still have time left in this podcast? That turned into quite a discussion, didn't it?
We've been known to rabbit trail down a few things in our time. At Charoff asked, in Sherry's recent OTR, it was mentioned that European concerts are very different experiences from concerts in North America. How so? Three of you were in Europe and have been in North America, I believe.
Well, they still take your bottle caps for your beverages. So.
Yes, I think that's what they were looking for, is technical details. There's different accents in Europe, I've heard.
That's true. Yeah, there are different accents in
Check
in
off Europe. Some of the basics. Any others, maybe? Different time zones are different?
Different time zones.
No, okay. Let's... any commentary on just the atmosphere and sort of how it... the vibe of the thing.
I think you hit the nail on the head on that, you know, from the get go. Now it could have been just because you were in Dublin. But from what I've been told about, you know, things actually, about shows on the European continent, it carries over that when you enter into the arena, there is already an anticipation of excitement to see the act that you're about to see. In North America, for some of the shows that I went to, it was as if you were dragging somebody who just, you know, didn't want to be at the show, or they were given tickets, or, you know, it's a bucket list item. I know a few songs or whatever. People know every single song in the audience in Europe. And for me, the singing was louder. The atmosphere was better. There was better electricity in the arena. And as I put in the OTR column, you know, being in Madison Square Garden and having 10,000 people singing along and getting excited and enthusiasm. That's one thing, but that's only like half the arena. When you have 10,000 people either in Stockholm or at the Three Arena or at some of these venues around Europe, that's almost the entire venue. And it just makes a completely different electricity in that room. And I would love to now see a show on the continent now that I've got the bucket list off for Dublin. Just from what I heard on the Mixlers and from what I saw on Periscope, it was just unreal. And in talking with people in the GA line, they also consider those shows much better.
Interesting. Yeah, there's definitely a bit of an added energy just because you're in Dublin, I'm sure. But still, yeah, it definitely feels like in general, the arts are, this is a very broad generalization, but the arts in general are more appreciated in Europe than they are in North America. And so it feels like even something like popular rock band or whatever coming through, they're not seen as like that old U2 band or whatever as much as they are sort of in North America that we maybe take for granted or whatever over here. I don't know what the exact reason is, but
no, I was once told by a very good family friend, somebody who my dad went to high school with, that once you're established in Europe, you will always have that established reverence or respect. If you're in the States, you have to keep fighting for that
relevance
time and time again. Whereas in Europe, once you're known, you will always be known. Mm-hmm. You will always have a following.
Yeah. Yeah. It's actually a good discussion to have. I think someone put that on our list of future topics. Cause, just when we run out of things you two specific to talk about, we can go into that. And we will, we'll segue a bit into, talking Dublin actually now, because someone, it wasn't me, I have the tweet listed as me, but I forgot to mention who it was, but not a question, but would love to see observations, reflections, insights from Sherry, and I'm sure others, on seeing U2 sites in Dublin. Tell me if this would make a interesting challenge for a future episode, not necessarily the next one, but I was washing dishes, trying to keep the kids occupied and not destroying stuff, and I had Numb on, and I was thinking, I wonder how far people can get reciting the lyrics to Numb before they, you know, forget or screw up or whatever without cheating, right? Obviously, Matt, looking at you here.
Another great.
Whoa, whoa, whoa. Why looking at me?
I'm looking towards you somewhere in the world. I don't know where are you. But, well, you cheated on, there was a thing we did, a game show element we did in this segment at some point in the past.
And now
that you
I have a
on.
Reputation, right?
It just takes once.
That's how it works, huh?
Wow. Anyways, we'll see. I don't, what do you guys think of that as a challenge to put to future guests? I guess no, not when
I know too. I couldn't do it, but I would love to listen and observe.
Yeah,
I could get maybe one line. It's don't listen, don't talk, don't something. That's all I know.
My favorite line is "Have another grape."
And I'm terrible. As we've established many times on this podcast, I'm terrible with their lyrics. So.
That's true. Yeah. Anyways, we'll see. If anybody out there, we have no way. It's obviously on the honor system. We have no way of like knowing you can do it or not. But if you have audio of yourself,
what you could do is not announce the song in advance, right?
Right.
That way you eliminate cheating.
Yeah.
So you just like randomly pick a song. Okay, so for this week, you know, we're going to do Stuck in a Moment You Can't Get Out Of. And
yeah.
Well, you know, whatever.
I do terrible. I was thinking with Numb, at least I could like probably put together an okay backing track so you could, because I do terrible. If I hear the music in the background, I can usually go along with stuff. But if it's just like reciting the lyric off the top of my head, I don't know how good I would do. But
how about Fast Cars?
Let's hear it. Go, Sherry.
Oh, no.
Okay.
The first line is "Oh no."
No. I don't have my dinger, my fail buzzer.
Okay, that's a good suggested title right there. I
don't know. All right, moving on before I stick my foot even further down my mouth.
Oh.
let's talk on the roundtable about Dublin, of course. Big, as anybody in the U2 world was well aware, I'm sure they had their concerts in Dublin recently, and a bunch of the at U2 staff, including three of the four people on this podcast, were at the show, or at least one of them. And I don't know who wants to start exactly. I know there's something in the notes from Jill about an interesting story.
Can we start at the end, if that's okay? Because
and work backwards, sure.
Yeah, we'll work backwards because I don't want us to run out of time on the podcast and not hear the story. Because Jill sent out a tweet while she was flying home on Sunday, I think it was.
Yeah, Sunday.
With a photo, a selfie that she took with Dallas Hsu at the Dublin airport and said something about, just met Dallas and had a great chat with him, and we even talked about the At U2 20th anniversary party, which, of course, Dallas was very involved in. And I tweeted back, and I said, Jill, you have to tell this whole story to the whole staff. And it's now been 72 hours, and she has yet to tell this story.
You guys, I'm tired. I had a day off.
So we need to hear this story.
Yes, I will. So am I telling the story now?
You are telling the story.
Okay, wonderful. Okay, so see the world in green and blue, Dallas Hsu right in front of you. That's what happened at the Dublin airport. It was Dallas Hsu at the airport, not Michael Fassbender, who I was wanting to meet the whole time I was in Ireland because he's Irish. Anybody who knows me on Twitter knows I'm obsessed with Michael Fassbender. So
no.
I was at the airport and I was ready to fly from Dublin to London because I had a layover there before I flew back into New York, and I was waiting at the terminal and we were sort of getting ready to board, and it was really crowded in the near my gate area, and I saw a guy standing there. He had sort of like salt and pepper hair and like a goatee, and he was wearing an IE Tour like track jacket, not the one that Sherry bought that was like at the souvenirs, but like a nice one. It had like the full logo on it, and it was really great. And I was like, oh, why didn't they sell it at the souvenir stand? So I was like looking at this guy's hoodie. And then sitting next to him is Dallas. And I'm like, oh my God, like, what is going on? Like, I don't know what to do right now. So I'm sort of standing there, and Naomi, is an Australian fan who I know through Twitter, had actually started talking to them. So she was talking to them for about like 10 minutes. And I'm like standing there, like trying to not be like creepy McCreeper, like in their conversation, but like I couldn't hear what they were talking about. But I'm just sort of standing there, and I'm like, oh my God, I'm like, what if we board and I don't get to talk to him? And like, what do I do? And I'm sort of like freaking out. And then the little notification on like the screen for at the gate said the flight to London was delayed by a half hour. So I'm like, oh, this is great. Like, I'll probably be able to get time. So Naomi takes her photo with Dallas, and then he sees me and he's like, oh, he's like, hi. And I'm like, I'm wearing the green Dublin shirt that was sold at the shows that had Peter Rowan on the front. So I'm like, hi. And you know how like Chris on our staff, his like first go-to is to say, oh my God. So like my go-to for anything is to just burst into tears, hysterically crying. So I started to cry, but like I reined it in really fast because I just didn't want to be that person. So I was just like, hi. I was like, my name is Jill. And I just wanted to tell you how much these shows and this entire tour has meant to me on such a personal level. And he was so nice about it. He was just like, that means so much. He said he loves hearing from the fans about how they're loving the shows and what they like seeing when they're going to all these different cities, seeing the band. And so I said I was coming. I said, I came to Dublin all the way from New York, and I said, I'm flying home to New York today. And he's like, oh, he's like, that's where we're heading, to New York. And I said, oh, I was like, well, I went to all the shows at the Garden this summer at MSG. And I said, but I have to tell you, I was like, I'm a staff writer for @u2.com. And I said, probably my favorite New York gig of the summer was when you guys came to our party. And he starts to smile and he starts to laugh. And he said, you know, he's like, I got to tell you, he's like, that was the craziest night. He said, a lot of that was Edge's idea. He said they were in the car outside the venue. And he said, they're in the car. And Edge says, okay, Dallas, you go inside and you get on stage and like you pretend like you're like the main act and you're going to play with the band and everything. And I'm going to go and I'm going to tell the owner of the club that you're going to play a certain noise or a certain note. And then that's when I'm going to get on stage with Adam and like we're all just going to do this. And he's just laughing and I'm just he's like, I didn't know what was going to happen. He said, like, I get on stage and everybody's screaming my name. And he said, I'm not famous. He's like, why is everybody screaming my name? He's like, I'm not, you know, like I'm not Edge. He's like, I'm just me. So he said he couldn't believe like the reaction from the crowd was like, not only when he got on stage, but when just Edge and Adam got on stage and he said he just couldn't believe it. And he said, Unforgettable Fire. He's like, they're a group of great guys. And he said he loved that. Like they, like Edge and Adam were able to sort of like make us happy, make the crowd happy. And he said it was such a great night. And he said he was happy that like they all could, you know, could be a part of it for us. And I was just like, oh my God, it was like so great. But I just sort of thought about like all of them like in the car and like Edge just like giving off these ideas and Adam just like leaning back, styling his hair, like, yeah, like we're just gonna do that, you know? But I just thought like the greatest thing. I couldn't believe it. So I thanked him and I said, well, on behalf of like me and like the rest of the staff, I was just like, thank you like so much. I said, you have no idea. I was like, a bunch of us were all upstairs in that venue. We were all either just like crying or just screaming up and down, like jumping for joy. We could not believe this was actually going on like at our party. And like, he was so humble about it and he was so sweet. And so he asked me my name and I said, well, like, my name is Jill. And as I said that, he slid his hand like into mine, like, giving me a handshake. And that's when I felt he gave me the guitar pick in my hand. And I said, I hope we get to see you guys, you know, soon again. And in North America, and he either said maybe or most likely, he said one of the two. I couldn't figure out, like, I can't remember at this point. So North America, I think, you know, will obviously like happen next year again, hopefully. And then he introduced me to his friend whose name I believe is Niall, because I looked at the tour program and there is a Niall who is listed on like the staff in the tour program. So that's probably like who it was. But so I met him and he took my photo with Dallas, and Dallas is so nice. He goes, Jill, he goes, let's take this photo. And I was like, okay, sure, it's great. You know? And so Naomi was still standing there and she was talking about how she had listened to, or she had saw the Periscope, I believe, of the AG2 party. And then I talked about how much I love the Dublin shows. And I said, I was like, oh, my first day when I got to Dublin, I got my U2 tattoo. So I had showed them my tattoo and Naomi was like, oh, have you guys heard of the U2 tattoo project? And Dallas was like, no, he didn't know what it was. So she was talking about Beth and Chris and the project and everything. And he looks at Niall and he goes, man, he's like, we really got to like get in the loop with all this stuff. Cause it's like, they don't have like a social media or anything. So she was telling them, oh, she's like, they're on Facebook and Twitter and Instagram. So I was showing them, I showed them the City of Lightning Lights tattoo I got. Then I showed them my walk on tattoo that I have on my forearm. And Niall really liked it. And Dallas saw it. He's like, I love that. He's so great. And he said, when we were in Vancouver at the start of the tour, he's like, I really pushed to have Walk On put on the set list. He's like, I really love Edge's guitar work on it. And he said, in particular, during 360. So I was like, oh, I thought that would have been like so great. Cause you know, I was like, I would have loved Walk On to have been sort of in the show. And I'd wonder like what other songs like they had thought about doing, but you know, ended up not putting in the show. So we talked about like the tattoo project for a minute. And then I had said, I thanked him again for like the photo and everything. And they had to kind of start boarding cause they were in, you know, they were in like first class. And then, before they had walked away, Dallas had saw my shirt with Peter Rowan on and he pointed and he said, oh, he's like, hey, I know that guy, but he doesn't look like that anymore. So I was like, yeah. And I was like, oh, these are the shirts that they sold at the shows. And Naomi was like, oh, she's like, yeah, I got a red one. And Dallas was, and I showed him the back of it because it said like Dublin had the dates on. He goes, man, he's like, we don't ever get to see any of this stuff. He's like, and Naomi was like, yeah, he's like, she's like, these are really cool souvenirs for a lot of these shows to have like specific sort of like shirts or items like that. And he goes, well, the only things like I get to keep after the shows are Edge's hats. So
what an odd thing to
I know, yeah, right? So
does Dallas have like a closet full of Edge's hats?
That's how I know. I go like a bunch of like beanies, like on array, like in a closet or something. So
he could probably clothe the whole of Norway for crying out loud.
So we said goodbye and we said, oh, have a safe flight. And then, so they went to go board and like me and Naomi, we were talking. That's when like I started to cry and I was like, you're so nice. I can't believe this happened. Like all this stuff. So, I had said to her, I was like, oh, I'm sorry. Like, I didn't want to like impose on your conversation with him or anything. And she was like, no, she's like, don't worry about it. She's like, I talked to him for like 10 minutes. She's like, don't worry about it. So she had said she had been a little bit nervous to approach them because she said as she was about to like say hi, she said they were talking about like office politics type of stuff. So that would have been like weird for me to sort of like jump into a conversation like when if they were talking about stuff like that. But so nice to her, so nice to me. And then we walked onto the plane and we saw them like in their seats or whatever. So we were like, oh, like get back safe, have a nice flight. And Dallas said, oh, he said to me, he was like, have a safe flight, Joy. He called me Joy, but I don't care because he was so nice. You can call me whatever you want. It's totally cool, whatever. But they ended up not being on my flight back to New York. But before he got on the flight, this is when we were still at the gate, he had said he was going to New York, and I said, oh, me too. And I said that if he was ever like in the area, I was like, oh, I told him to come visit the bakery I work at. So I told him the name and I told him like where it is. And he said, oh, he's like, so if I go, I can just get a cake, right? And I said, well, no, I was like, I make cookies when I'm there. And he goes, well, you know, here they call cookies biscuits. So I got like this baked goods lesson from Dallas, like in the Dublin airport. So that was hysterical. But I gave him like the name of it and everything. And so I was like hoping like while he was like in the city, like he could just like casually like stop in the bakery or whatever. And I would have just given him like a ton of cookies. But that was it. So, so nice. And I knew like when I saw him, I definitely wanted to just like thank him just for how just awesome like the tour has been. I wanted to mention the party and I wanted to sort of ask like if he knew like when they were going to be coming back. So I got, I think, all the information I needed. And again, like the sweetest person like you would ever like want to meet, like ever. So nice.
That's awesome.
That's the cool thing. They always, the you know, whether it's Dallas or whomever, they always seem to have, you know, time to chat with you two fans. And you just, you hear, you know, that kind of story, you know, from other people too. And it's good to know that the band isn't surrounded by, you know, jerks and curmudgeons and all this sort of stuff. So.
That's awesome,
Joe.
Oh, thank you. And he also told Naomi, like, they were talking about, because she had got a pick from him. She got a pick and a piece of chocolate from him for her birthday. I forgot which show it was. But he said to her that if there's, like, during certain shows, like, at the end when he gives out picks, if he just happens to give them out on South Side and not North Side, it's nothing personal. It's just he, like, runs out of them. So it's not like he's only giving them to one specific side. It's just whatever picks he has on them, like that's just however many he gives out. He's like, it's nothing personal to like anyone, you know.
We should try to estimate how many picks have been handed out.
Yeah, right.
That'd be like impossible.
And I got an Adam pick. I didn't even get like an Edge specific pick. I just got an Adam one.
I know Adam uses picks, but I've never paid close enough attention to know which ones he actually uses a pick on. That'd be another topic for the Dissection of U2 Live podcast episode we have. I'm wondering if that was Niall Stokes, hot press editor. Maybe he was with him or something. Was he? Doesn't really matter. We won't go into that. So he's just curious. When you were saying he was going to be maybe on your flight or whatever, I'd be like, I don't know how I would sleep the whole, or rest or whatever, the whole flight, just knowing that Dallas is sitting up there somewhere and I could be like peppering him with questions about
Edge's guitar. That's stuff. That's what I would have done. I'm telling you. But I just like loved him saying, like talking about the party, like they're in the car and Edge is like, okay, you're going to get on stage and play this note and like the crowd's going to go crazy. Like Edge, the scientist, masterminding like the whole at U2 party. Like
Little did Edge know, we had already planned that out for him.
That's awesome.
Awesome, awesome.
Yeah, and that's, like you said, Matt, I think like they would certainly, it's not like U2 fans are fans of the people around U2 naturally, but the questions obviously come back to you too, the, as the band and stuff. And so it's not like they would get tons of questions about the band, and they could have every right to be like, hey, I'm a person too, you know, or whatever. And, but the fact that they're so gracious, every story you hear of all these, anybody who works with you too, whether, wherever they are in the organization, basically often are just like the nicest folks as well. And, it's not like that with every band and every artist. No. That's for sure. So, yeah. How about Matt or Sherry? I don't know who would want to go next as far as just some story or just thoughts on Dublin in general.
Yeah, I mean, I think the highlight for me was recording last week's podcast. It was like the best thing we ever did. No, I'm joking. No, the, you know, Sherry was there for 2 and 3, and I was there for 3 and 4, and Jill was there for 3 and 4, correct?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I don't know. I mean, it was just, it's, I mean, it's just, it's hard to put into words, I guess, for me, because it's such, I just, I get, when I hear the songs, this happened when I was there for the Pop Mart shows, and it happened last weekend, and I just start to associate the songs as they play them with the things in the city that, you know, were just part of the history. So, you know, when you hear, you know, you hear, like, it's, it was very emotional for me to hear Sunday Bloody Sunday get played in Dublin last weekend. And I've not been a huge fan of this version of Sunday Bloody Sunday, you know, because it's kind of, it's just, well, we all know how different it is. And it's just, it's not like I dislike everything. It's just like, you know, it's like, okay, that's, there's Sunday Bloody Sunday. It's not anything I've ever gotten into. But at the show number 3, when they started playing that, and I'm thinking, and the fan, the audience reaction to that song in particular, and to all the songs, really was just amazing. And I just thought, wow, this is Dublin's song. And the audience was incredible. And then I start thinking about how, you know, this song was written about the history of this part of the country and Northern Ireland. And it just, I don't know. It was just, like I said, I'm not doing a good job explaining this. It was just very emotional to experience the songs in their hometown, in their home country, and think about, you know, like when Gloria came on the second song.
Oh, that was like incredible.
Yeah, the second song of the show on show number 3, and I'm like, you know, good Lord, you know, this song is such a part of this, you know, they recorded the video just, you know, right across, literally right across the river from where we're hearing them play is where, you know, they record the video, and it's just, I don't know. I just, it was very emotional just to hear those songs in the hometown for me.
It was incredible watching from just above general admission, the entire floor just jumping and thrusting. It looked like it had become its own heart beating in time to the music. And just the embrace that the audience gave to Gloria on night 3 was incredible.
And I'll add New Year's Day as well. The reaction on New Year's Day out on the E stage. That was a hell yeah moment. So yeah, it's just, I don't know. It's something you have to, I wish every U2 fan could figure out a way to just get there at least once and experience one show in Dublin, because it's so, it's just, yeah, it's all that.
And that's where I think totally, like I was saying in the last episode of being in Dublin and getting carted around by the hostel owner or whatever, but like going to a pub and hearing U2's album just being played in a pub and everybody, you know, probably half tourists or whatever, everybody singing along. There is just like this richness and this history that you kind of feel is coming alive in front of you. And I can only imagine obviously seeing the band there on top of that live would just, you know, that much more. And just like you said, Matt, the emotion, you did a great job of explaining, because just the emotion of that moment is just kind of like everything coming together. Even just reading, I was just rereading or reading for the first time the book that came with the U2.com membership thing, which Sherry, we should cover at the end here, but, and just the going through the genesis of the band again, which we've all read or heard or whatever, but just hearing it actually from like a lot of Niall Stokes' perspective and yeah, thinking of the history and stuff that you guys sort of walked through. And, you know, it's getting 20, 30, whatever, however many years, we don't need to say specifically since it's happened or whatever. So anyways, Sherry, how about you? Anything from Dublin that sticks out as a cool memory?
Just about everything. And that's not a throwaway comment. You know, getting to walk through Temple Bar, walking over the bridges from south side to north side and back and forth, and just thinking through the history, going through song lyrics. You know, I had the opportunity while my husband was in some business meetings just to walk solo. And I really appreciated that time to almost meditate on what is it about the city? What is it about these little alleyways? What is it about this particular building? You know, all of a sudden the mist comes in, then the downpour comes in, and then the sun comes out, and just the changing weather that could change on a flip of a dime type of thing. I really enjoyed being able to just soak in the history, soak in the culture, and to be able to cross-reference it to, you know, as Matt pointed out, you know, with the Gloria, with the video being recorded just up the road, or, you know, being able to walk over to Hanover Quay and stand outside of this the studio, which has now become a huge graffiti magnet now that Windmill Lane has been completely demolished. And I have to admit that my favorite memory, my favorite takeaway, was getting to add to that graffiti at Hanover Quay. You know, there's some personal stuff that I left from me. I put some personal stuff on there for a few other people. My husband, who's 6'2", was able to put up a wanted drawing of the Dalton brothers on my behalf, which I thought was fantastic. Bumped into Beth and Chris, who were putting up some memories of the tattoo project. Just to leave there. And, you know, I figure it'll be written over soon. Somebody that will come with spray paint, and it'll suddenly become that tapestry of art, like what happened over at Windmill Lane. But I just felt like I did the pilgrimage from soup to nuts throughout the city. Closed down a pub, singing acoustic U2. You know, I felt like I had a full experience, and I left the city with a full spirit, and that is more than anybody could have hoped from such an experience. The shows, I loved the two that I went to, but being able to be front row on night two, directly in front of Adam, and I spent the time putting my phone away. I did snap a few pictures that I did post, but for the most part, when they came over to perform in front, I wanted to give them everything that I could. I traveled all this way. I wasn't going to just stand at the barricade and not give my entire energy at the show. And what was nice was Adam was actually scanning the crowd looking for eyeballs. You know, he wanted eye contact. And whenever he received it, he actually performed a little bit longer or would acknowledge you, which was great. Bono, when he came over to our section, he was already in Mephisto character, or he was already into whatever the character was that he was singing from, or that part of himself where he was singing, that in our area of the stage, we didn't really get a lot of that type of interaction. Larry waved, and Edge came over just on a couple of occasions. But, you know, in the same way that Kelly Eddington said of her Chicago experience, where she was just watching and looking at the extreme detail and picking up, you know, with an artist's eye, you know, some of the intricacies of the performance, I tried to do the same. And there is just so much that I can remember from Dublin 2 that will never leave my mind. So, you know, I left that show very, very full as well, which made up for night 3, where I felt very claustrophobic and had to steer as clear from general admission as possible, which, you know, upon realizing why Edge's side was so much more crowded than Adam's side, I knew I had to get out of Edge's side. That was because when Bono entered the stage at 3 Arena, he came in from the concession stand area. So about 15 minutes before showtime, security had lined up in front of the vendors and blocked off access to Adam's side of the stage. So the only entrance. Yeah, go ahead, Matt.
You're saying Bono went to the concession stand before he got on stage?
Yes. Yes.
What the heck? What kind of revelation is this?
Pint.
Exactly. So people coming into the venue who were coming in from the Liffey entrance, that was the only way in. They couldn't cross over to Adam's side. They were being all funneled into Edge's side. That was also where all of the Cedarwood Lounge people were getting funneled in. That was where all the VIPs were getting funneled in. That was the only access to the floor for that 15 minutes before showtime. And once Bono entered at the start of Joey Ramone and they allowed ease of entry again, you couldn't move on Edge's side. And so at that point, I'm like, dude, I'm feeling very claustrophobic right now. I need to get away from this. And then I decided to go up to the beer garden level, which was slightly above. If you look at my Twitter feed, I took a few pictures. I did a few Instagrams from up there. But security did not allow anybody to basically stand around up there. You either went to your seat or you went back down. So I just wanted to try to find a nice little nook that I could feel a little bit more freedom in. And that was why I was able to really pay attention to how the audience was for night 3. I mean, you had people on getting their girlfriends up on their shoulders. I had a couple people who were trying to climb the scaffolding in order to get a better view above everybody's heads. There were people who were actually standing on the wood bar tables in order to get a better view. It was amazing just to see that type of enthusiasm, just to be able to see a screen, which for whatever reason, you would have to be in a really bad position to miss that screen, which ironically, night 2, when I was front row in front of Adam, when they went over to the E stage, I couldn't see the screen because I had tall people in front of me, the biggest screen in the smallest arena, and I flipping couldn't see it. So when the band started performing, when Meerkat went on, I just decided I'm going to watch it on Meerkat. So here I am, front row, watching what's going on in back of me on Meerkat because I couldn't see it. And meanwhile, as all this is happening, I'm getting death stares from Art Fogel from Live Nation why I'm not watching the band. So I flip my phone around to say, I'm watching them on Meerkat. I can't see
Oops.
Behind me. You know?
My life as a 5-foot-tall U2 fan.
Yeah, it sucks. Bono is taller than me. He should be happy to have shorter fans.
Or provide you with the platform shoes that McFeasta used to wear.
Anyway, so that's my Dublin memory.
Awesome. Yeah, there's, I'm sure, countless fan stories and stuff that also is, you know, we will hear about in the future of things that happened just that week, as often I'm sure does when U2 is in town, and just crazy fun things that people get up to and the band gets up to. And just scanning through, I missed some of the retweets and stuff. If you go to Sherry's Twitter account, U2Com, at U2Com Sherry, she's retweeting some stuff of like Adam's arrival at the after party in a bathrobe of some sort.
Yeah.
Sandals. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's the same bathrobe that was featured in some of his earlier tweets from back in Vancouver and Los Angeles. So that's his favorite bathrobe, I would believe.
You'd have to think, yeah, if it made it all the way around the world.
And flip-flops.
Yeah.
It's really rude.
Yeah, sorry. All right, any closing thoughts on Dublin before we move on?
I just know the one thing I think that's going to stand out for me, and Matt can totally vouch for this. Dublin 3 during Iris when Bono's voice cracked.
Oh, heartbreaking.
And yeah. His hand was shaking, holding the mic. Like, I was done. Like, oh my God. I just like watching that like on the big screen. I just wanted to like hug him and be like, it's okay, Iris. You know what I mean? Like,
and God. Norman was at that show, right?
Yeah, I believe so.
Yeah. So
yeah, that was a moment. That was very, very much a moment for sure.
Like every Iris moment I had, like seeing like up to that point for all the shows I saw, like that was like, God, like it was like incredible to see. It was like, here he is like in his hometown, like on stage, like singing about his mom. And it's just like watching him. And I'm like, he's going to cry, you know, because I'm like heaving in this pit right now, crying my eyes out. But I'm just going to remember that, like my favorite song, just seeing him just so emotional and just like, I just appreciated it so much. Like, I'll always like love how like honest he is with that song, like performing it, like watching it on the HBO thing. I'm going to be like crying into my blanket that I'm wrapped up in right now. So
Sean McGee in the chat room asks, Jill, could you literally even?
I can never even, Sean. I can't just.
I thought that's a worthwhile question.
Yeah.
Although I do have to say, specifically for Sean, the shows were on Fleek.
Oh.
That's a real Zoo TV moment.
I was going to ask about that, not to be too cynical or whatever, but how much of like Bono, they do that sort of like rehearsed spontaneity thing really well. And I'm not saying what he was doing was an act by any means.
Oh.
But also like how they know how to like play that emotional card and do that really well, I think not to a fault, but like, because that's part of the performance, right? And not that moment specifically, I'm not thinking of, but like, it would be hard as Bono, the showman, to not want to put on an even better show, an amazing show for the hometown crowd, and your buddies are at the show and stuff, and like folk, like just the history, like UTGW in the chat room mentions Andy Rowan being there, and there's picture of him that, you know, at the show and stuff, and just like the history that we've talked about. And I'm not really even stating anything other than I just can't imagine the thought process of having to put together that show with all the history and all the people and that you're sort of pressure in a way. It feels like it's relaxing on the one hand because you're in your hometown, but it's like enormous pressure to have this amazing emotional moment that everybody's kind of waiting to happen. And obviously they pulled it off, I guess, is the cool part on over four shows. So very cool.
Well, I would also think you have enough people in that room who know your stories.
Yeah.
Who were there when they happened and have no problem calling
the rock drop
if you misrepresented that particular aspect of your backstory. So I think in particular, having all of their childhood friends, having their family members, having so many of the people from the neighborhood there, they knew that they had to be on point. So I think that also elevated the performance a little bit more, knowing that they have no problems telling them that, they were slightly off in recounting a particular story.
Yeah.
Now before we wrap up here, Chris, yeah. I have a procedural question, because Potty Mouth McBoston back there has dropped 2 S-bombs in the podcast. How does that affect our iTunes rating?
Well, I flagged them. We'll I'll bleep them in some form.
Awesome.
We'll
come up with
okay, good.
Something like that.
There we go. Perfect.
No.
All right. You go ahead and do that.
We'll find some sort of U2-ism to slip in.
I don't want to end up like in the, you know, in the foul language section of the iTunes podcast store or whatever it's called. You know, I just
listen, man. I don't need 11. I'm with the band.
Or sure, she's with
Potty
the show.
McBoston, because I'm Creepy McCreeper when I was trying to talk to Dallas.
Potty Mouth McBoston. There
is this,
you go.
Are you? Is there a special sponsorship that you've arranged with McDonald's to always bring up the?
Well, he is a McGee, so.
Right? I guess.
A,
oh yeah.
I'm a Mick, so
yeah,
count.
Comes by naturally.
All right, we've been on for an hour now.
Yeah,
the giddiness has commenced in high form. So there you go.
We'll brief mention, just worth checking out if you haven't already, on at U2.com, the just coverage of Bono and Edge at World AIDS Day yesterday. Right? Am I on my calendar?
Yes.
I'm the one who didn't.
We're
move
good old Miley Cyrus forgot the lyrics to One.
No.
Yeah.
She's not. Wow. She's not used to singing with clothes on. So give her a break.
All right. and also, of course, the upcoming, like we've mentioned, the HBO shows in Paris. Bono was just, as a result of, I'm sure, part of the World AIDS Day also, they're doing a bit of talk about that show and just the significance of heading back to it, back to Paris and putting on the show. And anybody have comments on that as we're sort of wrapping up, just things we're excited about, and just I think it's remarkable, I guess, and not unexpected that they would go back. But it still is a thing that they have to like consider, that, you know, as much as they're talking about being with bravado and, you know, we're going back and we're going to bring the show back to Paris and wanting to do that, there still is, you know, whatever, 30 to 60,000 people, depending on how many is at each show, coming to this show that are wanting to be safe, right? And so,
well, they just hosted, Paris just hosted so many world leaders.
Yeah.
And the security was very tight. I would expect something similar, not that, you know, U2 has the same status as, you know, all of the various leaders of all the countries, but I think that they will have very similar type security.
There have been other events at that Accora Hotels Arena since the attacks. None on the level of international visibility that the U2 shows will have, but you know, they've been putting on events, and there have been other concerts at smaller venues in Paris. So you know, and I don't want to speak for Paris or Paris U2 fans anyway, but I mean, life is continuing to some degree. Obviously it'll never be the same, but, and it's terrible what happened, but it's not like this is the very first show that's happened in the city since the attacks.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's being dubbed in solidarity with Paris.
Yeah. Yeah. Very cool. Yeah. So looking forward to that. And of course, we'll have coverage on atu2.com about that, about the concert and how it all goes down and what, like, whether Jill is crying buckets during Iris, et cetera.
Yeah.
We'll have a report in from her, I'm sure, on the future episode.
Lots of crying emojis.
There you go. Okay, everybody, shout out if you want to your Twitter or whatever, if people want to follow up questions on Twitter or things like that. Starting with you, Sherry.
At U2Com Sherry.
And Jill.
I'm tweeting about Michael Fassbender on my Twitter, which is beautifulday36.
There you go. And Matt, where are you at with Fassbender?
I'm going to change my Twitter name to Potty Mouth McBoston. I am currently at Matt McGee.
Currently, yeah. Until things change, I'm at iChris on Twitter. And of course, you could follow the at U2.com on Twitter, at U2. That's ATU2. And then hashtag ask at U2 is where you can submit questions, comments, and thoughts for the show on Twitter. Not to be confused with at U2 podcast hashtag, which already has a few new pictures on it. If you've been playing along at home, you'll notice that Matt and myself and Sherry, I think, have tweeted pictures of recording the podcast. So now it's your turn to send us pictures of you listening to the podcast wherever you are in the world. Facebook.com/ATU2Com is where you can find us on Facebook. And previous episodes of the show can be found goodstuff.fm/ATU2. We're also on iTunes and soon to be in the Google Podcast Play, whatever it's called, thing that they're doing. So wherever you want to listen to us, you can find us, hopefully, if you want to listen to us. And we will be back next week. Thanks for listening, everybody. Have a great day.